afternoon or morning, I realize at whatever time you're listening to this. This is a Riddles in the Dark Digest 2.04, and I am Trish Lambert, your friendly co-host for Riddles in the Dark, and also your friendly co-host for Riddles in the Dark Digest, along with my other friendly co-host, Laura Burkholz. Hello, Laura.
Hello. We're a very friendly bunch here.
Yes, we are. We're a very friendly bunch.
Not illustrious, as some of our colleagues are. Just
not illustrious, that's right. And we're, you know, if we need Dave to be like, it's the best digest episode, podcast episode on the internet.
That's right. You don't need to listen to anything else, including that other podcast that doesn't have the digest in its name.
That's right. Oh, by the way, I mean, you know, we're doing this on the 29th of April, so everybody knows this because I'm going to timestamp us here a little bit. So Laura has posted the penultimate Silmarillion seminar episode.
I have.
On the site. I mean, it's kind of winding to a close. Are you going to have, like, you know, empty nest syndrome after this is done?
You know, a little bit. And in fact, I already have empty nest syndrome because if you do listen to the episode, you'll realize that at the end, and I hope this isn't giving anything away, we actually lost the last episode.
Oh.
It's the lost episode. So the Silmarillionaires and Dr. Olson are hopefully in the not too distant future going to get together and record another last episode. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, hopefully it will. So yeah, oh, that's too bad. It's, oh yeah, you know, in fact, one of our listeners today wrote on Facebook that she scared both her husband and her cat when she jumped out of bed saying, the next Silmarillion seminar is up. So when she gets to the end of that episode, she may weep.
She may cry. But the wait probably won't be as bad as it's been. And I do want to apologize a little bit, because we were doing something we thought would speed up the flow of the episodes, and it ended up taking a lot longer than anybody thought. So
that was doing the intros.
That was having people do the intros. That took a long time. So, but we are done now, and we just need to get everybody together to record.
Right, and this seminar is ageless. I mean, this is an evergreen seminar. I mean, this book, you know, 20 years from now, this seminar will still be applicable, given, you know, that it's about the Silmarillion. So,
well,
I mean,
exactly. The book came out, 40 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I'll be listening to it again, you know, either in parts or in whole when I, you know, go back to refer to the Silmarillion, because, you know, you guys went into such detail that I think it's really gold. So that's the first thing that's timestamped. The second thing that's timestamped is on the 27th, which was 2 days ago, our illustrious Dave Kale of the Dave Kale World Dominance Network got married.
Yes, he did.
Wonderful fiance, Teresa, and I was present at the wedding, and in fact represented all of Dave's internet Tolkien fans by doing a reading that was an excerpt and kind of a abridgment, or, you know, what would you call that? We did sort of
an excerpt.
Yeah. Of the Baron and Luthien, of a piece of the Baron and Luthien story.
Yes, and it was very, very romantic.
Very romantic. Well, the funny part was that Dave, as Laura knows, because we've been doing this with him, Dave had kind of been, you know, editing and asking advice and whatnot. And we kind of got the reading down, and it has to do with the part where Baron is, has left Luthien to go fight Morgoth, and he wants to leave her in Doriath to be safe, and she will have none of that and comes after him and basically says, look, buddy, you know, you got me no matter what you decide to do or what you do, and I'm not staying behind anymore. And he's kind of both concerned and relieved, and then they go off, and she actually kicks butt and rescues him. So
she does. It's a good thing she came along.
Good thing she came along, yeah. So Dave had left quite, you know, a lot of it out, because basically we said, you know, a lot of people in the audience aren't going to know names, and, you know, there's a lot of sort of other surrounding things that really don't need to be part of the reading. So I had to laugh, because they had what they called a non-rehearsal dinner on Friday night. Dave read from the Lay of Lathian, the Baron and Luthien story, and I'm like, you sucker, you know, you're adding in all the stuff that you took out for the reading by doing that. And then also,
good for Dave.
Yes, and then also during the ceremony, instead of writing their own vows, what they did was they wrote letters to each other, and they gave them to the celebrant to read. And I think in true Dave form, he must have, you know, given the letter like right before the ceremony, because it was obvious the celebrant had not read the letter before. And it was all longhand writing, 3 pages to like Teresa's 1 page. And so the guy who's a retired, this is so funny for me to say this, a retired Roman Catholic priest, he retired so that he could get married.
Mm.
So as he's a celebrant, you know, like he does non-denominational services or whatever, mm-hmm. You know, for a fee. But it was still very, you know, it was still very religious. I mean, it was still, there was very a lot of religious. In fact, when I read the reading for Baron and Luthien, he kind of like looked at me, when he looked at the group and goes, well, it is holy. And then so when he's reading the letter, so Dave goes on for 3 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
Writing the Baron and Luthien story.
Dave is not at a lack of words. He is very rarely speechless.
He is. And he basically, you know, went on about how she's his Luthien and how why, you know, the Baron and Luthien story is so so, you know, apropos to them. And so he went on and he named Luthien and he named Morgoth and he named the Silmarils. And at the very end, he called her my Tenuvial. And the poor guy didn't know how to pronounce any of those names.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness. Well, I have to say one thing for Teresa. She is a good sport.
She is. And I had to laugh.
She is not a big Tolkien fan.
No, she's not. And she, it's kind of like this fond quirk that she puts up with, kind of, you know what I mean? It's like she's fond of, oh, in fact, in her letter was all about why we're good together and that we push each other and that we, you know, are there for each other. You know, it was a lot of that. And so I'll love you forever, Teresa. And then there was a P.S. and she goes, P.S. I know you'd be disappointed if there wasn't at least one Tolkien reference in this letter. And I mean, a number of us just cracked up laughing. And she says, so here it is. You will always be my Baron, and I will always be your Luthien. And I just thought that was so cute.
That is very cute.
And then I did the reading prior to this letter. When he announced that we're going to have readings and that Trish would, you know, give the first reading, I stood up and I said an excerpt from The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien. And you know, I could hear people in the audience, certain ones that knew, were snickering. I'm like, of course it would be.
Well, that's great.
Small venue, and it was a beautiful bunch of people, and Dave kicked butt doing the wedding dance. You know, he's actually a ballroom dancer.
I saw the video. Very impressive.
And his sister actually ran like a swing group when they were at Stanford.
Really? Wow. Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's a man of many talents.
Many talents, definitely a Renaissance man. So, yeah, so I posted the video of their first dance up on the Riddles in the Dark page, so, and also the Tolkien Professor page. So please, if you haven't looked, go look. It's really wonderful, and they're just a lovely, lovely couple. So it was really nice, and I really was kind of, you know, I actually said, because he acknowledged the night before when he did the reading, he also toasted different people, and he acknowledged me coming. And I said, yes, I'm representing, you know, the hundreds of fans that Dave has on, you know, through this thing, and everybody, like, was like, whoa. So I'm here on behalf of all those people, and, yeah, it was really cute. It was just a wonderful thing. I'm really glad I came up for it. His sister are just so nice, just really nice. His dad didn't make it, but his mom and sister. And his sister was his best man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and best woman.
Well, yeah, and in 7 weeks, he will be her Mister of Honor.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. They're only 13 months apart, so they're like really, really close. And
it's wow. That's
really
great.
So anyway, so that's, you know, that's it on that. So, let's talk about Episode 2.04, the episode was about the spider sequence. Though the riddle really was more about how the dwarves and the elves would be colliding, you know, and at what point in the spider sequence would they be doing so. It was kind of like, you know, when we went to set out to do a riddle, it was really, you know, what are you going to ask about the spiders? But really what's more, you know, like, how, under what circumstances will the dwarves be captured by the wood elves? But, you know, of course we know that it's around the spider sequence.
Yes.
Um, So you actually had some questions, right, about the riddle in terms of.
Well, yes, I was wondering, because in the book, the dwarves are well and free of the spiders completely before the elves show up. So I was thinking, you know, the riddles themselves say, do the elves rescue the dwarves from the spider web casings? Do they actually, you know, cut right. the dwarves out of the casings? Well, I thought, what if it's something in between? What if the you know, Bilbo gets the dwarves out of the spider webs, but the elves come and actually rescue them from the hundreds of spiders that are chasing them.
That would be still be A.
That would still be A.
Yeah, and okay. So then that's the reason we did it that way, so that it was like what we're talking about here is you know, do the elves actually cut the dwarves out of the casings, or are they already freed out of the casings by the time the elves show up? And the reason, you know, we've kind of inferred, and I think it's safe to infer, based on what Jackson's released to us so far, and also the Lego playset, which Tauriel and, you know, Legolas are part of that spider playset, that somewhere in the spider sequence, the elves do show up. And they appear to fight along with them. Yeah. And you know, we could be completely wrong, but I think it's a safe bet.
I thought I heard something, too, that you said there's a picture of Thorin with them, too. But he is not with them in the book. He's been captured by the elves before anybody else does.
Right. So that's another one, which is that it appears that Thorin is going to be captured along with everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense to me.
It does, too, because, you know, you have to compress it somewhat.
Right.
Why not have them all get captured at the same time?
Yeah, and I mean, what does it do to the story to have him captured with the dwarves versus not with the dwarves? I mean, you know, it's just, it's no real story, you know, there's no pivotal thing in the story that, you know, that matters. So, yeah, I mean, I could see him taking that out. And, yeah, I think somebody actually during our episode had told us, because I think we brought that up, didn't we, during the episode, and somebody wrote in that said, hey, there's a picture of Thorin with his hair. I'm like, okay, well, that's probably.
That solves that one. Yeah. Don't ask that for a riddle.
So that, you know, the question that we were kind of bringing out in this episode in terms of the spiders, well, there was a few things. You know, the other thing that we had toyed with in terms of the riddle had to do with what Jackson had shared in an interview about how the spiders communicate. And the fact that Bilbo will understand what the spiders, how the spiders are communicating, what they're saying when he has the ring on. Mm. And kind of were like, well, you know, is there a riddle there? But there really wasn't, you know, it's, first of all, we're trying to kind of tie the book in to the riddle to some degree. And also, it just didn't make for a riddle. You know, I guess it could have been a conundrum, although we have a different conundrum that we're going to do. But that is another piece. You know, so it wasn't just, you know, elves, you know, how are they going to encounter the elves, but also what is the spider stuff going to be like? And, you know, is Bilbo going to, and this is when, and the other one we've seen is when he's staring at Sting, you know, so we're assuming, I think, that he's going to be naming Sting. Or somehow or another, he's going to have a whole, you know, new level of appreciation of his sword during this sequence. So,
yeah, well, I'm hoping they'll follow at least somewhat like the book, where Bilbo is the hero and rescues the dwarves, you know, including Thorin, hopefully.
Right.
And, you know, because that's his pivotal point in the book, where he really starts to take over. Now, in the movie, they've already had him kind of rescue or try to rescue Thorin earlier.
Right.
You know, but this is his chance to really actually rescue them without Eagles coming in or Gandalf or anybody else to save the day.
Yeah, and also, I think we're going to get, you know, this will be, I would say it's probably going to be our first chance in movie two to see him, you know, using the ring. Because I can't think, nothing really before that would call upon him using the ring. I know it didn't in the book.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, understanding the spiders, that kind of makes sense. If you think about when Frodo put the ring on, you know, he could see the Nazgul, and that sort of world became clear. And these spiders are not exactly like the book. And in the book, they seem to be just black spiders walking around Mirkwood. Well, in the movie, they seem to be like more enchanted spiders. You remember?
And also definitely connected to Sauron.
Yeah. So You know, so that the putting the ring on will connect Bilbo to Sauron and to his servants. So I guess it makes sense. We'll have to see.
How else are you going to do it? I mean, you can't really have the spiders be mute. I suppose he could try having the spiders be mute, but I just don't think it would be as interesting a scene. And you can't have them talking like they do in Rankin Bass.
No. Well, so, yeah, I think to make them more animated, to make them more seem more like evil spirits.
Right.
They have to be saying something.
Right, right. Also, I would imagine that, because in the book, I believe their conversation also drives Bilbo's strategy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the other thing, too. It's like, you know, I think you kind of need that. So I'm kind of glad they went that direction. I think that almost really is the only one that makes sense. I mean, I'm hoping it comes off well in the movie and not cheesy or, you know, unbelievable.
I think they'll do a good job. They have so far.
You know, Bilbo's already been a kamikaze, you know, when he went after the orc and, you know, like you said, you know, he's already kind of had that hero turn. But I'm thinking that we'll probably see this as a deepening and also of a way of, assuming that Thorin is with them, another way of, deepening the bromance between Thorin and Bilbo.
The bromance.
Yeah.
which will end badly.
Yes, in the third movie. And actually, Armitage has talked about that. And I have gathered, personally, although I suppose that's open to interpretation, but in his interviews, it seems to me that what's going to happen in movie two is this relationship between them is going to deepen. Mm-hmm. So that it becomes all the more dramatic when he when Bilbo quote unquote betrays Thorin in movie three, and Thorin, you know, is going to have a really violent reaction to that.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
If you think about it in terms of, you know, story development and mm-hmm. especially the movie, I mean, that makes sense. So the riddle, let's see. So let me go ahead and read the riddle out loud. And I'm thinking we do something a little bit different. We had only three Mythgard entries this time, but they were all relatively long, right?
Yes, they are.
And let me read the riddle, and then let's go to the Mythgard comments, and then you can kind of, you know, run through some of them, and we can maybe stop and give our, you know, our opinions if we have any about any of this stuff. So,
okay.
Riddle 2.04. Under what circumstances will the dwarves be captured by the wood elves? So the choices are A, the elves are sent out. Specifically, and I'm adding some words here, but specifically sent out to capture the dwarves, and they do so after the dwarves are free from the spiderweb casings, meaning that the elves don't have anything to do with freeing the dwarves from the spiderweb casings. And this is closest to the book answer of all of them, as usual in our tradition. B is the elves are sent out to capture the dwarves. They still are specifically sent out to capture the dwarves, but they have to rescue them from the spiderweb casings. So the elves, either in toto or helping Bilbo or, you know, however, they actually set sword to spider casing, you know, in some form. And then C is the elves, it's basically the same choices in terms of they have nothing to do with freeing them or they help free them. But the difference being that the elves encounter the dwarves by chance or are seeking them benevolently after they are free from the spider casings. And that's C. The difference here being that Thranduil has not sent out the elves specifically to capture the dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like they're on a mission of their own. You know, they're on maybe a scouting party or something, and they happen upon the dwarves. Or they know the dwarves are there, and Thranduil has said, God, you know, go get them and, you know, mm-hmm. arm's way.
Yeah.
D is that same thing. They encounter the dwarves by chance or seek them benevolently, and they rescue them from they actually do rescue them, or at least participate in rescuing them from the spider casings. So those are the four choices. And I can't remember what I answered. I have to go over and look. So let's go to this.
I thought you said C.
I think I said C. Because I believe that they just happen on them. You know, in other words, it's not a purposeful, you know, they're not out seeking the dwarves to take them captive. That what we talked about, and I think this is probably true, is that the elves encounter the dwarves by chance, and that Thorin ticks them off with his attitude, and then they take them, you know, it's like, finally they take him prisoner and take him back to Thranduil, and like, he insults them.
So I can see the insulting, yes, definitely.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, I don't need your help or, you know, whatever. And, you know you're trespassing, and he'll get all lippy. It may even be Legolas. Because I think we see, I may be imagining this, but it seems like I remember seeing some scenes that seem to imply that Legolas is actually somehow involved in the spider sequence.
Well, yeah, isn't Legolas part of the party that goes out?
I think so. I mean, I don't think we know absolutely for sure, but I think we've seen...
Isn't he in the Lego set?
Oh, well, yeah, he is. That's right. He and Tauriel are both in the Lego set. So, yeah. And that might be why I'm assuming that.
Yeah.
So I see, you know, Thorin, like, he insults Legolas's father, and that's the last straw, you know, and he binds him and takes him into the, you know, into the woodland kingdom. Anyway, so, actually, I'll tell you what, let me do this. Let me read Mark Fisher's first, and then we'll go to the thing. So I want to read Mark Fisher's Encyclopedia of Arda. He's given a really nice, commentary here. So he says, I suppose the underlying question here is, how do the dwarves end up captured by the spiders in the first place? The precise logic of the book probably wouldn't work in the movie version, but on the other hand, I can hardly see the dwarves randomly wandering off the path without the elves being involved somehow. So while I doubt we'll see the encounter working exactly as it does in the original, I'll presume that we'll still see the dwarves interrupting the elves somehow, then becoming lost in the woods. It seems to follow that the elves won't reappear later by chance. Given how Peter Jackson likes to play up character conflicts, I think we'll see something of that kind here. For example, Thranduil's instinct will be to leave them to their fate, but Legolas will disobey his father and lead a ragtag rescue mission. That solves a lot of problems. It keeps the elves as a threat without undermining Legolas' character too badly, and it also explains why the elves would allow the dwarves to become lost in the woods in the first place. So let's assume that happens. I'm not completely sure how that feeds into your options, since really the rescue party would be benevolent in the sense that they don't want to leave the dwarves to the spiders while still fully intending to capture them. I'll assume that what else could they do with them? I'll assume that capture takes precedence. As for the timing of the rescue, my feeling is that the simplest version of events, dwarves get captured by spiders, elves rescue them, is a bit lacking in drama. I just scrolled way too far down. Yet the elves do seem to need some kind of role. I guess we'll see something a little closer to the book. Bilbo shows some of the same heroism, making a daring stand and maybe even rescuing a few of the dwarves. If we then take a slight diversion from the original, the spiders can regroup and events suddenly turn hopeless before Legolas and friends appear at the last moment to save the day, giving Bilbo a chance to vanish and preserve the overall narrative of the book. I confess I'm not absolutely sure how all that fits in with your options, but if I'm following things correctly, that's my first A of the new series. Hurrah!
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, you know, they're obviously not going to do, well, I don't think they're going to do the whole feast thing where, you know, they stumble across these big feasts and then the lights go out. But, you know, maybe they do see just some lights off the path, and maybe that just leads them off the path enough that they fall into the path of these spiders.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, you know, and we actually, I guess the three of us really didn't think of it, because how do they get off the path in the first place?
Something has to happen to get them off the path, unless the spiders just attack them on the path. Which doesn't seem very likely.
Well, it's possible too, I suppose.
It's possible. It's possible. But then,
stuff. So, you know, I mean, there's got to be some kind of stuff going on. Yeah. I mean, I know we talked about that with regard to the heart or deer or whatever the heck it is could be what causes Bomber to fall.
Well, then, you know, the other thing is this all going to take place at night?
Ah.
It'd be awfully hard to film if it was taking place in pitch black.
Well,
but then again, the trolls, that was the middle of the night, too.
Yeah, that's true. That was a time, too. So he'll have.
Yeah, I guess I have a couple questions. If it's going to deviate from the book, yeah, first of all, how are they going to get the dwarves lost in the woods,
right?
You know, unless there is something that leads them off the path? And then how are the elves going to know that they're in the woods? You know, I mean, the second one could almost be like a Lothlorien type of answer. I mean, they just know they're there because that's the elves' woods and they know everything that's going on. So I think the chances of them you know, running across the dwarves by chance, to me that just doesn't seem very elvish, at least the way the elves...
Or benevolent. The choice is either by chance or benevolently.
Or benevolently, yeah.
Not specifically to capture them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think with the way Thranduil feels about elves and Legolas, too, about dwarves, it's hard to think that they would be completely benevolent. I mean, you know, the elves are a benevolent people. They're good people, as Tolkien likes to keep saying. So they're, you know, not going to catch them to kill them or anything like that. But they're not going to let them run around the woods either.
Well, I will admit that since I saw this, we did this episode, we saw the Peter Jackson sneak preview, and mm-hmm. there's a scene of Thranduil being particularly snarky, you know, lounging across his antler throne and saying something like, what the heck are you doing in my wood, basically. I mean, he's, yeah. Because I answered C, I'm still holding
on. You're committed.
That the judges might deem the party that finds the dwarves, Legolas's party, might deem them at least, seeking them benevolently. I've got my fingers crossed. And that what may happen instead, they are seeking them benevolently, but Thorin is such a butthead to Legolas that Legolas gets picked off and then they capture him and take him. The original intent might have been seeking them benevolently to have them come as guests to the Elven Kingdom. And the more you're talking, the more I realize it's unlikely, especially given Thranduil's demeanor in that sneak preview, he doesn't seem particularly friendly. But the other thing is, I think maybe I always thought this in the book, or do you remember? I mean, what Tolkien really never, told us what the Elven King actually planned to do with the dwarves.
Well, he wanted them to tell him what they were doing in his woods. So in that case, the movie does follow the book, and he says, you can rot in my dungeon until you tell me what's going on.
Right.
So, and as it turns out later, the Elven King feels like he has a stake in the dragon's treasure.
Right.
So maybe Thranduil is kind of guessing what's going on.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that whole thing is going to be really interesting to see. Well, let's look at the Mythgard page. Dennis is our first one up.
Want me to read that one?
Yeah, please do. And if you want to, we can stop at logical places if it makes sense.
Ah, okay. From Dennis. My two cents. Elvish feast. The whole Elvish feast interruption sequence is not going to happen. For the practical reason that it works in the book because of the dark, the movie is not going to have that dark. Like Moria and like what we've seen of Mirkwood already, the light levels have to be high enough for us to see the action, so the whole torches go out and it's dark thing just isn't going to work. Well, like I said, you could see, they can light it enough so that you could see.
Sure.
But I just think that whole sequence is going to be too... It's going to stop the action too much if they do it.
Yeah,
like
it's going to take too much time. I mean, I guess kind of like a will-o'-the-wisp fairy light.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I agree. I don't think we're going to see the Elvish feast. At most we'll see some other kind of fairy thing happen. But
yeah. And then, will Thorin be captured alone? I say not. If he were captured, the other dwarves would rush to his aid and fight to the death. Unless he volunteered to go find help, which would be futile. I mean, why would he think help was nigh after weeks of wandering? No, I can't imagine any way Peter Jackson could accomplish this. And again, it's because we will not have that overpowering dark in the film. So the confusion and separation of the dwarves will not happen like that. I think the dwarves will not speak to Thranduil until they are present to him as captives. They may see him from afar, perhaps. But I don't think they'll interact until out of the forest. Yeah,
if you take away the feast, then you basically take away the circumstances under which Thorin gets captured.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As for the elves and whether they were there by chance or not, I say by chance. How would the elves know a party of dwarves were wandering through the forest? I say it was a chance meeting, if chance you call it. Say rather it was meant to be. The elves may have been out hunting, gathering intelligence, or perhaps Legolas and Tariel were out for a moonlight stroll. You know, that's probably not true. As for the rest, I think Dave has it right. This scene needs to allow Bilbo the time to shine and be the up-and-coming hero. It also needs action, near catastrophe and you catastrophe. So Bilbo will free the dwarves, fight off the spiders, but the tide will turn, and just as it seems all is lost, the elvish horns will sound and or arrows will fly. Legolas will slide down a tree on a shield and save the day. The elves will defeat or fend off the attack and take the exhausted, injured dwarves captive. After Helm's Deep in the Two Towers, elves in the spider battle seem quite acceptable by comparison. I agree. I think that's the most likely thing, too. I think that the elves are going to save the dwarves and save Bilbo.
I think the near catastrophe, you catastrophe thing is going to happen.
Yeah. It's just too tempting not to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, it follows with how Jackson's done, you know, sort of his formula anyway. And we did see, I think, in the sneak preview, Legolas did slide. I don't think it was shield surfing necessarily, but he did, like, slide some, you know, he did kind of like a surfing thing.
Did he?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's in this sequence or not, but, you know, I had to kind of laugh. It's like, oh, please. But, you know, I think his point, that's, you know, in his earlier where he was saying he thinks it's by chance, I mean, that's kind of where I've been. Like, the elves may have been out hunting, gathering intelligence, you know, it was a sortie sent out on their own business, you know, mm-hmm. what the spiders are up to, and they happen on the dwarves.
They happen on the dwarves.
Yeah, which I think could be, you know, granted,
it could be.
You know, I think, was it Mark who said that, you know, Thranduil knows what goes on in the forest, and I don't know, maybe not, you know, I mean, I don't think he has a mirror like Galadriel does, so, I mean,
That's true. He's not as omniscient as Galadriel appears to be.
This will be interesting to see, you know, because I do think it's either they're sent out on purpose or they happen upon them. So we'll have to see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool. Well, Dennis, you know, thanks, Dennis, because that was all really well thought out. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the next comment from Michael Lucero. I wouldn't be too quick to dismiss the Elvish Feast purely on the darkness reason. We could have equally, and just as justifiably, said the same thing about the entire Moria sequence, and yet they were able to pull off a convincing impression of darkness, even though there was light to see the characters. I can very easily see it happening. This is an interesting question, because, as y'all said, any of the options are equally likely. He's got to be a Southerner.
Yay!
There's nothing wrong with that. I'd like to see the more eerie aspect of the elves, but Peter Jackson seems to think of them quite differently than that. I'm going with A, I think. I've given...
Oh, didn't lock his answer.
Okay. Yeah. He gave up Facebook for Lent. So, he's a good Catholic.
Yeah.
I'd also love to see a whole... There's another side to the story thing with Thranduil and Thorin, especially since I don't think his appearance with the whole entire army, and then the decision not to help after all, since it's not like he didn't know there was an army-worthy danger there. He wouldn't have just been taking his army out for a casual jaunt. Doesn't make much sense as it now stands. But I'm not terribly optimistic in light of the description of Legolas doing the right thing. It makes more sense, continuity-wise, to have Thranduil be the wise, patient one and Legolas be the hot-headed, dwarf-hating one who eventually learns to trust them from his interactions with Gimli. But it seems that's the opposite of what they're doing. Pity, since the whole father is old-fashioned and prejudiced while younger son is open-minded thing is a bit stale and doesn't fit well with Tolkien's story. That's true. But, you know, our sympathies are going to be with Legolas. So, you know, we can't really have Legolas being a jerk.
So. Well, the other thing is, I don't remember. I rewatched the Council of Elrond in the movie, The Fellowship of the Ring, relatively recently. And I was watching specifically for, you know, what does Gimli say? What does Legolas say? What's the nature of their interaction there? Because that sort of sets the tone for this sort of, you know, they don't get along kind of thing. And actually, Legolas isn't particularly aggressive or you know, mean to Gimli. It's the other way around. You know, Gimli's like, no elf is going to take
Never care. Trust an elf.
Exactly. Legolas doesn't really, you know, rise to the bait, or and he doesn't.
That's true.
As I recall, he doesn't really voice any bad feelings toward dwarves. So, you know, in terms of Jackson being, you know, true to his films, you know, continuity purposes, I think Legolas could be either way. I mean, he could go either way, but I think I think he's right. I think this old father's old fashioned and prejudice while younger son is open minded is be there.
Yeah. Well, Thranduil was old fashioned and prejudiced in the book.
That's true. And, you know,
it's not a big lover of dwarves.
Yeah. Right. And we think about the fact that Thranduil, or as Corey reminds us, the Elven King, because he wasn't named Thranduil in The Hobbit, is modeled a bit upon Thingol, too. So,
yes. You know,
we get a little bit of that legacy.
Yes. And we all know Thingol's views on dwarves. I wish I could remember what he said. The ill-formed and...
Yes.
I forget.
You mean just before he died?
Yes. Just before, he said it to a room full of dwarves, how ill-formed and unworthy they were, and they killed him.
I wonder if they'll put a version of that into Thranduil's speech in the movie. I mean, I realize...
Oh, that would be great, yeah.
But I wonder if that'll give an Easter egg, that there's enough similarity to what Thranduil says that those of us who've read the Silmarillion would recognize it. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, maybe, except the screenwriters have said that they haven't read the Silmarillion in so long because they don't have the rights to it. So they're on purpose not bringing anything from it. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. And then we have Sarah Watson, who actually has something a little different to say. Mm-hmm. So she says, I have an idea about the capture of the dwarves by the elves that makes sense with all the pictures and character conflicts we have been privy to. I agree with Professor Olson about the capture by the spiders and Bilbo freeing some of the dwarves and having to try to lead the spiders away for a second time. However, I think that the elves are battling the encroaching evil in the forest. I think that Legolas will be leading a faction of elves that hunts down and drives the spiders away. They will attack and defeat the spiders that have captured the dwarves. Thorin will be one of the dwarves that Bilbo was able to free, while he and the others who Bilbo freed free the rest of the dwarves. Thorin realizes who it was that killed the spiders and goes after the elven party, leading the rest of the dwarves on a mission of revenge. This fits with Thorin leading a cobweb-covered party of dwarves. As they attack the group of elves, Thorin is separated from the rest and is taken captive, or they are all taken captive as a group. Bilbo has followed after, still wearing the ring, and is therefore able to follow the elves and captives back to Thranduil unnoticed.
Right.
So
that's actually
the dwarves going and attacking the elves, which I don't think anybody's mentioned before.
Well, and you're right. You're absolutely right, Sarah. Very smart. And actually, Jackson's been building this with his, you know, with Thorin's, you know, practically irrational hatred of elves. Mm-hmm. Movie one. So,
yeah.
And we know he's hot-headed.
Yeah.
Impulsive, you know, given his attack on Azog. So, yeah, I mean, that totally. And it fits. I mean, all of that fits.
So she's a C on that one. She's a C. So that's extreme conflict on both sides.
All right.
Well, that is the end of the Mythgard.
Okay.
Comments. And then we have a few more Facebook comments. Okay, from Joshua Schwiegart. I answered B. My prediction is that Elven scouts will be watching the dwarves progress and see them get taken by the spiders. Thranduil will decide to lead them to their fate because that seems to be what he does best. Legolas will then have to do the right thing and go after the dwarves by himself. He and Bilbo will manage to free the dwarves but be overwhelmed in the chase. Thranduil will have to send soldiers in to save his son and the dwarves will end up being captured. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's a B. I like his comment that Thranduil will leave them to their fate because that seems to be what he does best. Dragon, spiders, whatever. Just get rid of those dwarves. And Michael Poteet, I like B because there'd be a nice dramatic irony in the elves freeing the dwarves from the webs, only to turn around and say, no doubt in Quenya, you're under arrest. Book 'em, Legolas. Oh, that's good. Anthony Carter, in Peter Jackson's world, elves always know what's going on. Add that with the Empire's photo of web-covered dwarves, and A seems a shoo-in. So, I'm kind of that opinion, too. I think the elves are going to know that they're there. So.
So are you going with A, by the way?
I'm going with, oh, yes, I'm going to go with A. I think that the elves are going to know that they're there. I think that they're going to free the dwarves from the spiders. So the only question I have, if the elves know they're there, why do they let them go for so long? I think it could be because they feel like they're maybe not going to actually go into elven territory. They're just staying on the path.
Yeah, well, you know,
once they go off the path for whatever reason, right. that's when they
I could see a scout coming back to report to Thranduil and saying there's dwarves in the woods, and Thranduil says, go get them. And, you know, it just is the amount of time it takes for Legolas and party to find them, the spider thing happens. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Not he finds out magically. He actually finds out from a scout, so there's travel time involved.
Well, that's true. And, I mean, the dwarves spend a long time in Mirkwood, but in the movie they're obviously not going to be spending that much time or...
Well, you know, and I mean, the scout thing actually does make sense because remember we've seen them, you know, like walking through Mirkwood, you know, carrying Bomber. And if there are scouts being sent out by the Elven King to, you know, basically just sort of, you know, guard the, you know, or find out what's going on, more than, you know, at least one scout would have seen these guys. And of course the elves wouldn't be seen, you know, they'd be, we'll see them, you know, like a camera will show us an elf seeing them and then running off to.
Yes. Well, you know, if they do have that deer show up, like we talked in the conundrum,
right.
You know, that could have been an elvish deer hunt.
Oh, that's right.
So they could have spotted them then too.
Spotted them then, right? So you're going to be an A. I'm the only C so far in the group of analysts. You and Dave and Corey are all A's, as is Mark Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
As is the majority of the Facebook, the Riddles in the Dark predictions page votes. Interestingly enough, Merrick and Golden Star from Casual Stroll to Mordor, Merrick has said D, and Golden Star says B.
Oh.
So we now officially have all four answers, you know, logged.
Yeah. Well, is it time for the conundrum?
I think it is. You want to let folks know what our conundrum is?
I will. The conundrum this week is, will Bilbo say Addercop or Tom Noddy during the spider sequence?
Actually, you know, I told Laura this before we started. It's like, if he either does one or the other, it's awesome. I mean, if he does both, that's super awesome. But I would love to hear either one or the other.
I want to hear both. I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to say it's going to be both. Just not because I think it's kind of like Beorn showing up at the Battle of Dol Guldur, you know, that we had a couple weeks ago. It's not that I think that's going to happen. I just want it to happen.
I know.
That's all.
I know.
You know, I just want to hear Addercop or Tom Noddy, especially because I was we were gypped out of Struck by Lightning in the first movie. So I want to hear some Addercop. I want to hear some Tom Noddy.
I know. And again, you know, I almost think it'll be, if he does do it, it would be a nod to the Tolkien geeks. Because, you know, I'm sure they don't expect everybody in the audience to understand that or bother too much to explain it. But it would make us very happy.
It would. I'm also, I also don't know if I've heard the word confusticate yet. But I would like to hear confusticate at least at one point in one of the three movies. Be bother would be good, but confusticate. I definitely want to hear that.
That would be great. And I could totally see Martin Freeman. That would totally make sense for him as Bilbo to say that. So,
It would.
Well, so we're both going with yeses on this, right?
Yes. We're both going with yeses. Yeah.
Well, I think we've probably wound it up. Anything else that you could think of about the spider sequence that either we talked about in the episode or that you want to add in?
No, you know, speaking of words, I was trying to use the word qua in the episode, but I wasn't able to fit it in, maybe because I'm not an English professor. Yeah, well, I heard Corey say it, and I thought, I could have worked that in somehow, but I couldn't do it.
Well, it's been another wonderful
time
spent with you. I enjoy this. And
I did miss the Rosca Bell noises in the back.
I'm on vacation.
No doggy kisses this time. No birds, or I don't know what all you have down there, but
they'll be back again, I'm sure, next episode.
And my little hobbit isn't here either, so
we don't have
it's just been quiet
either. So yeah, gosh, it's been kind of a boring one, I'm sure, for our listeners. Huh?
No, fascinating, I'm sure.
And the other thing, you know, I think with us, people have said, because, you know, one of the things about the main episodes is that I tend to come out louder. My sound level is higher than the other two.
Hmm.
But people have told me that on our episodes, because you're doing the recording, I don't come out loud, that you're actually louder than I am. So that's good. So we're offsetting.
Well, that's because when I go in and edit it, I make you quieter and me louder. So everyone will listen to me.
Funny. I mean, you know, you're just saying, you and Dave are funny. You make me laugh. Yeah, well, I think that's a
problem. There you go. There you go. So, well, in the interest of not dragging things on too long, we should probably call it a night.
That's right. Take us out, Mr. Holtz.
Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.